Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
And I want to start with the disaster that is the New Orleans Pelicans. What a night they had. What a night for the NBA and what a night they had. Let me start right there. So the first half of the NBA season came to a close yesterday. And it was a really weird close in the sense that New Orleans beat up on Oklahoma City 131-122. On the surface, nothing weird about one NBA team beating another. But it's a game where New Orleans lost Anthony Davis to a shoulder injury. And it's a game where Russell Westbrook had a 44-point triple-double. And yet the Pelicans win. Absolutely nothing made sense about that. And when you look at the NBA right now, it makes perfect sense, right? Because nothing makes sense. How the hell does OKC, which had been quietly building a case as a Western Conference dark horse, lose by 9 to the Pelicans? And how do they lose by 9 to the Pelicans on a night where Russ had his 11th straight triple-double and 44? I mean, seriously, how does that work? And not only did they lose, but they lost to a team that's currently right in the middle of a dumpster fire, which incidentally, a few minutes ago, just got worse. They're in the middle of a dumpster fire. Not my words, but the words of Pelicans head coach Alvin Gentry, which I'll get to in just a second. But first, what the hell happened with Anthony Davis? Right at the end of the first half, he went up to contest a shot from Nerlens Noel. He appeared to injure his shoulder, and he left the game.
Looks like an injury situation for AD.
Yeah, exactly right. If you go back to a play that just about the end of the second quarter there, you see AD favoring his left shoulder. See the left arm hanging there? And, of course, he did not return to the bench. Of course, he is supposed to be heading off to Charlotte to represent the Pelicans in his sixth All-Star Weekend appearance. But for tonight, Anthony Davis is finished.
Man, there's so much to unpack there. And it gets worse with the breaking news, which I'll get to in a minute. But that's a nightmare scenario for the Pelicans, which would have been the only reason to move him before the deadline, which I will get to in a minute with news involving Dell Demps. That would have been the only reason to move him before the deadline. I want to be very clear about this. Dell Demps did the right thing by not moving him. Dell Demps handled that exactly the way he should have and the way I would have if I was in his position. The only caveat was, the only risk in not moving Anthony Davis and waiting for the summer is he might get hurt and he might hurt his trade value. And that's what happened last night. However, the really weird thing was not that he got hurt, but that he left the arena. Yeah, that's not good. And not the injury, but because he just got dressed and left during the game. Because apparently the injury's not that bad. Reports this morning indicate it's a muscle contusion. But the fact that this guy changed and was seen leaving the arena in regular clothes while the game was still going on is a bad, bad look. And as weird and as ugly as things have been between Davis and the Pelicans, they were about to get even more weird and even uglier. Leaving the game with an injury is one thing. Leaving the arena with an injury is another thing. Look, I'm no authority on the code. I never played in the NBA. But I'm going to go ahead and guess that that's kind of against the code, to change out of your uniform and leave the arena during a game. And if you're leaving the building with an injury during the game, man, it better be on a stretcher. Or it better be like Paul Pierce in a wheelchair and then come back a few minutes later. If you're leaving the arena during a game, man, it better be on a spine board. And not after changing your clothes. That's a bad, bad look. That's a bad decision. But wouldn't you know, because they're so desperate to keep this guy, that it wouldn't fall on him? And it didn't. Which I will get to in a minute. But I don't know what went into Davis's throwing on his regular clothes and leaving while that game was still going on. Maybe we'll hear more about it. Maybe he had a good reason, but I can't imagine what it would be. It's a bad look, and a bad look for a guy who's always had an amazing reputation. What was the thinking behind him leaving? Did he have a plane to catch to get to Charlotte for the All-Star game? Was it because they didn't have an MRI machine in that facility? Did he need to get an MRI? And does it mean that we're now about to get into a Kawhi v. Spurs situation where Davis and the team have a dispute about the severity of the injury? and he ends up playing hide-and-seek from the team. You know, like Kawhi did, allegedly, when the Spurs came to visit and check on him, and they couldn't find him. Are we a few days away from AD's guys stuffing him into a trash can and wheeling him out of a building so the Pelicans can't get in touch with him? It seems like the team feels that way. It seems like ownership feels that way. Because ownership reportedly just fired Dell Demps. That just went down before the show started. And again, I'll get to that in a minute. But let me just say, this was Alvin Gentry's response before Dell got fired and after the game.
Looks like an injury situation for AD.
Yeah, exactly right.
Anyway, Alvin.
To tell you the truth, you know, this whole thing has been a dumpster fire, you know, and it's just hard, you know, for guys. You know, we want guys to be professional and we want them to do this, but it's hard for guys, you know, to go through what they've been through and to be able to come out and be the team of that quality. I'm happy for all the guys. I just thought that they did a great job. Don't know if he left the building or not. I have no idea. Then he left the building. I'm happy for the guys that, you know, that played the game and we won. Hey guys, I'm going to talk about the guys that played. They did a great job. We found a way to win the game. That's what's important.
There you have it. I mean, Alvin Gentry was not taking up for the guy who left the building. He said, I'm here to talk about the guys that played the game. I'm here to talk about the guys that won the game. I'm here to talk about the guys that sucked it up and beat a good Thunder team. His guys. The guys who were in uniform, the guys playing in that game, just played a hell of a game, and yet he's got to answer questions about a guy who didn't play in the second half and just left the arena. Instead of talking about Julius Randle and his 33 points, 11-board double-double to go along with 6 assists, or Drew Holiday having 32 points and 7 assists and great defense on Paul George, he's got to answer questions about Anthony Davis. Of course, Gentry was pissed. It's a credit to him that the guys who stayed, that they didn't quit and didn't mail it in. So with Davis leaving the arena, that dumpster fire had a train wreck slammed into it. And then it got worse this morning with a report from Woj and Bleacher Report that Dell Demps has been fired. Let me tell you something about that now. I understand ownership is pissed about Davis leaving. I understand they're pissed that they've been put in this position. But the answer is not to fire Dell Demps. Demps put them in a position. This guy handled the trade deadline perfectly. He put them in a position to get a battle between LA, Boston, and whoever gets the number one pick. Not doing that would have been asinine. Why should he have traded Anthony Davis to the Lakers? What were they offering him, really? A chance to reunite the 27 Lakers. That would have been such a reckless move. That would have been such a panic move. I mean, but Demps is getting jammed here. This is not his fault. Should he have taken that package from the Lakers just to avoid Davis leaving the arena? He didn't know the guy was going to get hurt. He didn't know the guy was going to get dressed and leave in the middle of the game. Unless there's something we don't know here. Because it looks like they're firing Demps because Davis left the arena in the middle of a game, because he got hurt. And what? It's Demps' fault the guy got hurt? Demps did the right thing. Demps did the right thing by not moving him at the deadline. Unless there's something else going on behind the scenes involving Dell Demps that I don't know about, that makes no sense. I mean, again, what were they hoping for? A reunited Lakers team. Were they hoping that Davis would not embarrass them by leaving the arena? Would they have been better off as a team if he had made that trade? No, you want to maximize your asset, right? It's the most important trade in the history of the franchise. Make sure you get as much as you possibly can for this guy. You don't get as much as you possibly can by negotiating with only one team. You need other buyers. You need the Celtics. You need the team that's got the number one pick overall. Demps did the right thing. What, were they not going to wait and see if they had a chance to get Zion? Arash Markazi is my guest. Arash, brother, it is so good to have you in the jungle. How are you?
Good. It's good to be home. It's good to be back with you, Romy. It's been way too long, so I am so stoked. I kind of forgot this was a byproduct of me taking my dream job, and it's still kind of surreal to hear you say Los Angeles Times sports columnist. I have to pinch myself, but man, it's good to be back.
I don't know about you, but I always get a workout in before my Friday happy hour, and when I do, I'm rocking my Aftershocks headphones. Best sounding, most innovative headphones I have ever owned. Aftershocks features patented bone conduction technology. The headphones do not go inside your ear like earbuds that hurt or fall out. Aftershocks rest gently just outside. Yeah, I said it. Outside your ear and produce sound by sending mini vibrations through your cheekbone to your inner ear, bypassing your eardrum. Aftershocks are also perfect if you're out running or biking since you need to hear. It's a huge safety factor because they don't go right in your ears. Aftershocks are super comfortable. They're flexible. They're awesome sounding and they're lightweight. I am amazed by these headphones and the technology. In fact, I am never going back to regular headphones ever again. Aftershocks wireless open-ear headphones are the coolest products ever. Order an Aftershocks tech bundle right now and get $50 off. Just hit roam.aftershocks.com and use code ROAM at checkout. That's the word after and then S-H-O-K-Z.com. roam.aftershocks.com. Rosh, it is so good to have you on this show. Honestly, it is so good to hear your voice, and I want to reiterate that. I mean, you're in Charlotte for the NBA All-Star Weekend, and I'll get to that in a minute, but knowing you, knowing the love you have for this city, knowing the love you have for LA sports, knowing how you grew up in this market, what does it feel like to hear yourself introduced as a columnist for the Los Angeles Times?
It still doesn't feel real. I mean, so I read Jim Murray growing up. I knew I wasn't going to be a player. At some point in your life, you realize, like, your mom's 5 feet, your dad's 5'2". You're probably not going to be taller than 5'6". So I knew, if I was going to be in sports, I was going to do sports commentary or journalism. And so that was always the dream job. So I've worked at some amazing places. But when the opportunity came along to join the hometown paper, being a kid from Los Angeles, growing up in the 818 and getting the chance to cover these teams. First week on the job was at the Super Bowl, third week on the job here in Charlotte for the All-Star game. It's crazy. It's nuts.
Arash Markazi joining us. He's a columnist with the LA Times. Arash, you mentioned Jim Murray. Now, you're writing the page 2 column for the Times, and your first column ran on February 12th, and you called Linda, the wife of Jim Murray, and you'd mentioned that. What did she tell you, and then what was it like to hear that?
So I basically wanted to give her a heads up that my first column is going to run Tuesday, February 12th. You know, if you want to pick up a copy, or I can send you a copy, whatever. And she said, Arash, I have chills right now. And I said, why? What? She said, Jim's column, his first ever column for the Los Angeles Times, ran on February 12th, 1961. I said, you got to be kidding me. Like it was like written in the stars. And again, listen, I'm never going to be Jim Murray, but the fact that that happened, it's some things, are not just a coincidence. So that made me feel so happy. And again, to cultivate that friendship with her has been so great. So it's just, I'm on cloud 9 right now.
Hey, listen, for those who don't know, also, Jim Murray was a Pulitzer Prize winner, a 14-time National Sports Writer of the Year, and you were a Murray Scholar and a member of the Jim Murray Memorial Foundation Board, so you get a chance to follow in his footsteps. Let me ask you this. What was a bigger highlight, the conversation that you had with Linda or tweeting about that conversation and having that tweet liked by Jack Youngblood?
Well, the Jack Youngblood thing, I mean, that was another guy that I grew up, so like, that's the coolest thing about this whole, a lot of the stuff that we get to do, I guess, I mean, it's still surreal for me when a player comes up to me and he says that he saw me on TV or that he like read my column because like, and I really hope that I never lose that, like that, like, wow, that is so cool that I'm talking to this person or that. It's like the fact that like Jack Youngblood, and when I took the job, Jack Youngblood, thanks for all of the support you've given me over the years, and he congratulated me. I'm like, dude, you play with a broken leg. Like, thank you,
Arash, listen, I can go one step better. Like, for instance, I'm older than you, and I know what that paper represents. I know what it's like to read that newspaper. I learned, like, as a kid, my dad taught me to read the box scores when I was in first grade. I would fight the old man for the LA Times sports page every single morning. So when you mention Jim Murray, I think you can relate to this. When I think about the LA Times, I think about the amazing guys who came before you. I think about, like, Scott Osler. Scott Osler, back in the day, wrote the most amazing column. Mike Downey wrote an amazing column. Say what you want. I was always a big T.J. Simers guy. He wrote an unbelievable column. Alan Mallenbud, whenever
That's
came over the
guy.
Table, Mudd was the only guy who had my back. Mudd had a dot, 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 Arash column. You know that. And his dot, dot, dot was, Rome was wrong, Everett was more wrong, and Mud told me how much heat he took for that. Hell, Bill Plaschke, man, our guy Plaschke, long before he was a TV star, was an L.A. Times guy. When you hear those names, what do you think?
The Alan Malamud one hits home because notes on a scorecard, you know, like when you're a kid, you have a short attention span. I love that column so much. So the column that I'm doing for Page Two is really kind of built off of him, just like notes after notes. And again, like, I love Los Angeles sports. I don't want to just do a column on, like, the Clippers or, like, the Rams. Like, I want to do it on, like, all the teams. So Mud's notes column is what I've based my column on. And again, these are legends. So, I mean, if I could do just one-tenth of a job that they did, they'll be stoked. But, yeah, I mean, the names that you mentioned, I mean, so just putting my name, at least in terms of I've written now for, like, the Los Angeles Times, I mean, if you would have told me that when I was growing up in Sherman Oaks, I would have said, no way, you're crazy. But, I mean, again, this has been a dream come true for sure.
Hey, look, Arash, you and I are doing, like, 818 stuff, L.A. stuff. I haven't even gotten to L.A. sports yet. Like, when you say growing up in Sherman Oaks, man, you know, I played my Little League baseball at Sherman Oaks Little League.
I know.
You know, and I just did that. Takes me back. Takes me back to the evenings at the Sportsman's Lodge once a year.
Yep.
And those little miniature screwdriver sets that they gave all of us kids. And my dad, my old man from Boston, would be like, yeah, that's not a toy. That's not a toy. And I'd think to myself, man, I wish it were. It sucks. What am I going to do with a bunch of mini screwdrivers? The Sportsman's Lodge. All right, so listen, Arash Markazi, my guest, one of the things that you did do in that first column was introduce yourself to the readers, but also lay down some of your thoughts on the L.A. sports scene. L.A. sports fans in particular take a lot of heat for being fair-weathered. I would argue they're good fans who just have lots of other options, and they'll take advantage of them rather than be blindly loyal to mediocrity. What do you make of all the L.A. fan bashing, and how fair is it?
So here's the thing, and I mentioned this in the column, sports is the only form of entertainment where having a discerning eye makes you a fickle fan. And it's like, no, listen, if you put a bad product on the field, it is not my civic duty to continue paying for that bad product. And a byproduct of this is that Los Angeles teams know that they have to put a good product on the field. And I would argue that that's why they go out and sign the best players, they sign the best coaches, because you can't put a bad product on the field or the court or whatnot and attract fans. And so you could say that's a fickle fan base. But you know what? If you're going to sell out for a bad product, where's the motivation for a team to pay more? No, listen, we're going to pack the house regardless of what crap you put on the field. So I've always respected the Los Angeles sports fans for saying, no, listen, we will support you, but if we don't like the product on the field, just like if we don't like this movie or if we don't like this food at this like place we go to, we're not going to go. So, listen, this is not our right to pay for a bad product. So again, I've always liked that about the Los Angeles fan.
Exactly right. Arash, this is why he has a column with the LA Times. Would you keep going to a crappy restaurant? No, of course
exactly.
Not. Of course not. Arash, now, for instance, then there's the take on L.A. as a football town, and now we've got a team that went to the Super Bowl and another team that had a look at it. We've got two good football teams right now, and yet there's still this take that, yeah, well, it doesn't matter. The question is not Rams or Chargers. The point is neither will work because it's still a Raiders town. Not my take, but a take that I hear every single day. What do you do with that one?
So two things on that. The Oakland Raiders, and I really emphasize the Oakland Raiders, don't represent Los Angeles, Jim. They've been in existence for 60 years. They only spent 13 years in Los Angeles, and they moved away 25 years ago. So listen, it's not a Raiders town. The other thing is, people are commentating on the TV figures in Los Angeles for the Super Bowl and the attendance. The Rams just moved back. We don't have this sort of connection with the Rams yet. I mean, imagine you broke up with your girlfriend, and then 21 years later, she comes back. At that point, you're married. You got two kids and a mortgage. And they want to pick up right where they left off. No, listen, I've moved on. I teach a class at USC. My kids, they all don't remember Los Angeles being, like, they don't remember a team being here. So they've all moved on. They're Packers fans. They're Steelers fans, Panthers fans. It's going to take a long time. When you're not in a market for 21 years, you lost all those fans. So it's not going to be like we are hardcore Los Angeles fans, it's going to take time. Listen, it might take 20 years before we are connected with the team. It would have helped if they won that Super Bowl, but it's going to take some time, whether it's 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, 20 years, because, again, there's not that connection with Los Angeles with the teams there right now.
Arash Markazi is a columnist with the LA Times. Arash, one more thing before you go. I mentioned that Dell Demps was fired reportedly this morning. Look, Anthony Davis wants to be a Laker. The Lakers want Anthony Davis as well. Do you expect him to ultimately end up with the Lakers, or is that simply not a foregone conclusion?
My guess is that he does go there because he said quite publicly that he wants to go there. And I'm not saying that the trade package that they have on the table or that will be on the table this summer is the best one. But if you're the Celtics and if you're some other team and he said, listen, you could trade for me if you want to, but I'm going to Los Angeles. I don't know if you want to trade, you know, let's just say two or three future first round picks and Jason Tatum and whatnot for a guy who's going to leave. So I do think at the end of the day, whether it's this summer or 1 year from today, he will be here in Los Angeles, but it's just going to take some time. By the way, there was no trade. There was no chance that deal was going to happen at the trade deadline. They were kind of strong-armed. The team looks bad, like, when that happens, but I do think he comes to Los Angeles sooner rather than later.
Last thought, Arash, you mentioned your class. What kind of class do you teach? And, like, I remember what it was like when I came up, and then you were the next generation, and you came up, and now you're talking to and teaching the next generation. What's the class, and what's the next generation like?
So it's a sports commentary class, and Jim, I'll tell you why it's so great. It's that at the beginning of class, I said, how many of you students know Jim Murray? No hands go up. I'm a little sad, but I get it. I give them a book of Jim's columns. These are his greatest Jim Murray columns. Linda Murray, his wife, comes into the class. She brings his Pulitzer. They get to pass around the Pulitzer, and they get to hold it. The last class we have, Steve Soboroff bought Jim Murray's typewriter. He brings in Jim Murray's typewriter. These kids don't even know what a typewriter is. They've never typed on a typewriter. They don't know what's happening.
Crazy.
They get to type on Jim Murray's typewriter. So it's a sports commentary class where I teach them how to do columns. And again, whether or not they want to be journalists or not, they get an appreciation for the job and what I do. And again, some of them have moved on to be sports journalists, but it's such a fun class for me. I love it, and I went to USC, and the fact that I get to go back to USC and teach this class is so cool.
Rush, you're home. You're home. You're home in L.A. You're home back
baby.
In the jungle. Man, you're home. A columnist for the Los Angeles Times, professor at USC, L.A. legend, good friend of the program. And, Rush, I got to think, and I don't want to be presumptuous, I got to think that you and I will be doing a lot more of this on this show.
I can't wait, Jim. We're so happy to hear that I was going to be on the show. So, please, let's do this more often.
Clones, let your money work for you and do it at Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. And there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level at all. This simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as 100 most popular. And with Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. And if you're listening to this podcast, Robinhood is giving you a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. You just have to sign up at jimrome.robinhood.com. That's jimrome.robinhood.com. Marcus Howard is my guest. Marcus, dude, that is quite a resume. Great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. How about yourself?
Good. I'm great. It's great to visit with you. You're coming off that win on Tuesday night. You had 36 in that 19-point win over DePaul. You guys won 10 of your last 11. Let me start right there. What is the mood and the vibe like around your team?
Oh, you know, it's been great. You know, anytime we can rack up wins like that, you know, it's really good for our program. You know, we've been really sticking to it, working hard each and every day. So, yeah, it's been a great atmosphere here at Marquette.
All right, I had your coach, Steve Wojciechowski, on the program earlier this season. We talked about what you mean to the program. What's it been like to play for Wojo?
Oh, it's been a great experience. You know, I've learned so much, you know, from my freshman year to now. not just from a basketball standpoint, from being just a man standpoint. You know, I've learned so much off the court from him as well. So, you know, I'm super thankful and blessed, you know, to have a coach like I do, and as well as just great teammates around me as well.
Marcus Howard, my guest. Listen, one of the things I want to reiterate is, in the conversation I had with him, it came up that the fact that basketball means so much to Marquette University, Marquette means so much to college basketball. I know you still have a lot of work to do this year, but knowing the history of that program, what's it mean to be in the top 10 in both polls right now?
Oh, I mean, it's great. You know, it's definitely a place we haven't been to in some time now. So, you know, to kind of be back in the conversation, you know, is really good for our program. I feel, you know, we're coming back on the rise, and it's only going to go up from here. So I think that's a great credit to Wojo and how he's built the program, the type of guys he's recruited. And, you know, just us as a team, you know, how we represented not only ourselves on the court, but in the community as well as a whole.
Now, Marcus, listening to you right now and having spoken to Wojo already, I've got an idea, a really good idea of how you're going to answer this question, but I need to ask it anyway. Your name is getting a lot of run for every National Player of the Year award. What's it like to hear that, and what would it mean to you to win?
You know, it means a lot, but I think it just means that I have a great coaching staff and great teammates around me. You know, they're so selfless in terms of letting me do what I do on a nightly basis. And, you know, it's really been good for us to win games. And it would mean a lot to me. I know it would mean a lot to this program. You know, this program's given so much to me. It's hard for me to even repay all that they've given me. So just anything I can do to, you know, shed light to this great university, this great program, I'm going to do that the best way I can. And whether that's on the court or off the court, you know, I'm just really, really fortunate to be in the position I'm in.
Like I said, I had a pretty good idea how you would answer that question. Marcus Howard joining us. Now, you've had 8 games of 30 or more, including a pair of 45-point games, and then you had that record-breaking 53-point game against Creighton. When you get into a zone like that, what's that like? What's that feel like?
Oh, I mean, it's kind of like an out-of-body experience. You know, it's kind of like you don't even realize you're doing it. And, you know, after the game, you're kind of just collecting your thoughts and everything. And, you know, it's great that all those games have ended in wins. So it's definitely a better mood from everybody, you know, when games like that end in wins. So it's just a great really experience, you know, just to be able to have big scoring nights like that. But, yeah, the biggest thing is just coming off the win. And I'm happy that each and every game that's been really big for us and big for myself, that they've all ended in a W.
Marquette guard Marcus Howard, my guest. You know what's interesting is you've got this incredible game and presence on the court. Now, when you were growing up, you were always one of the tallest guys on the floor until you got to the 7th grade, and then you pretty much stopped growing at 5'11". Initially, yep. When you're that young, how frustrating was that? And then how did you adjust your game to become as dominant as you are now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, growing up, you know, everyone thought I was going to be, you know, 6'8", and thought I was going to be over once I hit high school. But after 7th grade, you know, I just kind of stopped growing. But, you know, as that kind of went on, you know, it would be a little frustrating. But it came to a point in time where, you know, I just had to accept it. You know, I had to just find different ways to affect the game. And great credit to, you know, the people I've worked with, you know, my older brothers, Jordan and Desmond, then my coaches too, you know, really just helping me, you know, to put myself in good situations to where, you know, my size doesn't really affect me that much, that I'm still able to affect the game in different ways. So, yeah, you know, just in terms of just trying to, you know, solve that problem with though my height, you know, it's just been something another problem, you know, I like to solve is just, you know, try and find ways around it.
Marcus, I just want to confirm something. You're 19, right? You're not a 35-year-old dude who's been 10 years in the NBA. You're only 19,
no,
right?
Yeah, I'm 19 years old, yeah.
Just want to make sure. Okay, so the listeners know that. Now, you mentioned your brothers. You grew up in a really athletic family. Your parents were both athletes. Your
yep.
brother Jordan averaged 25 per game at Central Arkansas.
Yep.
Another brother, Desmond, also got after it on the court. What was it like to grow up in such an athletic family and household?
You know, it was great. Growing up, you know, I mean, there were a lot of battles and fights, you know. I would get beat up so much being the youngest. But, you know, in that time, you know, those two, you know, groomed me and helped me grow into the person I am today. So with that, I mean, I wouldn't be where I'm at if it weren't for my brothers and how they pushed me. And then, you know, my parents, you know, just sacrificing so much for me and my brothers to want to accomplish the things we wanted to is also the reason why we're at where we're at in life right now. But, yeah, you know, I wouldn't trade, you know, the way I grew up for anything. You know, I had a great home life in terms of, you know, always being competitive with my brothers. And, you know, we're still like that to this day. So, I mean, It's a great experience, you know, to be able to share that bond of basketball with people you love the most.
Right, so I can end this interview right now, and I'd be so impressed as is, but I want to make this point. In the offseason, you went to Costa Rica along with some other student-athletes and the Courts for Kids program to build basketball courts. There are a lot of things that you could be doing in the offseason, working on your game, getting ready for your future in the NBA. Why was that trip something you wanted to do?
Yeah, I think that just goes back to what Marquette University represents, you know, being the difference. And, you know, I thought, you know, I knew that coming home and, you know, being able to work out was always going to be there. But, you know, I definitely wanted to, you know, try and make a difference the best way I could. And, you know, when the opportunity presented itself, you know, I jumped on board with it right away. You know, I thought it was great, you know, to be able to go to a different country, experience a different culture, and to be able to impact those people in a way that, you know, I probably wouldn't have had the same opportunity here in the States. So, you know, being able to experience that with, you know, 15, 16 other student-athletes, it was unbelievable. I mean, to be able to, you know, build a basketball court out there, you know, get to experience their culture and what it's like to live there. It was an amazing experience. It's definitely, you know, as I've gone through life, you know, it's definitely probably one of the most memorable experiences I've ever had.
We're talking to Marcus Howard again, just 19. But to be fair, Marcus, you are turning 20 next month. So let's be transparent about that. Listen, the other thing is, what's amazing is it sounds like you've got this. You've got this. You've got this all under control. Something I really respect about you and your game is the fact that you are open and you're honest when you talk about certain tough issues. As an example, there is a lot of pressure on college athletes, especially somebody in your position. How do you go about dealing with that pressure, handling it?
Yeah, I mean, that just, I think, goes back to, you know, the people I have around me. You know, you can never do anything in this life alone. And, you know, I'm really fortunate to have great people around me, not only just my family, but, you know, people here at Marquette, you know, from our academic staff to our administration to, you know, faculty, you know, everybody in athletics. I mean, we're just like one big family. So, you know, whenever someone's going through something, I mean, we're really comfortable in terms of, you know, just sharing how we're feeling and being able to, you know, be open about things that we're dealing with. And, you know, us as student athletes too, I mean, in this community as a whole, we're all able to, you know, help each other out when we're going through something. So I think it's really cool.
I think finally a lot of 19-year-olds would be looking to other people, looking to emulate others, looking to others as role models. I think you have the sense that there are people looking at you. What's it like to feel or to know that you're already a role model at that age and people are looking up to you and following you?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like an eye-opening experience, you know, like you said. I mean, people our age are kind of looking up to people, but for people to be in that situation with me, it's definitely something different, you know. But, you know, as a person, as a man, you know, I try to, you know, represent myself, my family, my school the best way I can on and off the court. So, you know, trying to be the best influence for others, you know, especially kids that are younger than me growing up, wanting to be basketball players, I just try to, you know, do things the right way, whether that's playing the right way, whether that's acting the right way. You know, I just try to, you know, make sure I'm making my family proud.
Marcus Howard joining us, Marquette guard. One of the best things I could say about you is you make it look easy, you make it sound easy, and it's not. None of it is. There's nothing easy about this. A 6-time Big East Player of the Week. Marcus, really nice to have you on the show. Great to visit with you. Good luck. Hope we can do it again soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Appreciate you. Really well done. Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, they are both in-house. We are banging telephone calls. We have a lot to talk about. Brothers, I cannot tell you how happy I am to see you guys.
Romy, let me just feel this for a second. In the Jungle Live, I got to tell you, though, I'm a 4-time IWGP Tag Team Champion.
Oh,
I had to give him 3 because I won one before.
Oh, dude, my bad. My bad.
Hey, my father said, Carl, when you became a big star in Japan, I thought you made it. When you debuted at the Staples Center for the WWE to a massive reaction, I thought you made it. When you bought your mansion in Tampa, I thought you made it. And I said, I did, Dad. He goes, but now that you're walking into the jungle with Jim Rome, son, you've made it. I might have a tear in my eyes. Oh, my dad's a real clone. He doesn't have a job. Sits in front of the radio and listens to
He's a real clone.
He's a real clone,
dude. If you're getting dusty up in here off an introduction, I know it's tough. Hey, never mind your dad. Did you really bring your mom to a tour stop?
Oh, hold on. I got it right here, good brother. Look at that. My mom had a keepsake, babe. I'll never forget it.
This incredible. Tour stop. Okay, if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, tour stop number 30, the Cintas Center in the Natty, May 10th, 2003. Bro, you're famous and you're rich. Why did you keep that?
My mom has it. Mine is somewhere. Who knows where it is? But you know how mothers.
Here, hot car. You know how mothers. That's yours.
Yeah, I would have kept it, of course. I'm sure I have it somewhere. But my mother, man, you know how they are. Mothers are always.
I know how they are, of course. You know, she brought you into this world, man. She can do whatever she wants.
I said, Mom, remember when we went to the tour stop? And she goes, I still have that thing somewhere.
That's
I said, you got to bring it, baby.
All right, so Luke, you're along here, too. I got to ask you guys. First of all, did you guys get your brother pump in before the show?
Morning, brother pump. pump, sweat out the hate, get rid of the demons, and get ready to roam it up, good brother.
Because if you're a real brother, you
got a little hate.
You have a little red wine the night before. You got to get rid of it.
I was going
to
say, what kind of hate?
Blood out the body, you know
what kind of hate are you looking to get out?
Everything.
The red wine, or is there more?
We had a little vino in us last night.
Okay. Valentine's Day, a
couple
brother.
Beer skis, yeah. You know how it goes.
Hot Asian wife bought two
single
bottles
brother,
of wine
so
for the boy.
I took them out for Valentine's dinner with Baby Cash. We had a big time. So
Where did you guys go?
Well,
we tried.
We
tried to get around. A couple of Ubers took us to a couple of wrong places. One of the sushi places, the reservations, we had to have a reservation. We stormed out. So you know what we did? Uber Eats and ate at the hotel. But we had our vino, baby, so we were good.
Oh, man. Welcome to SoCal. Okay, wait a minute. If you guys got your brother pump in, did you get your brother tan in?
Look at me. Look at me, Roman. They asked us if I needed makeup.
We had to refuse the makeup.
They asked us if I needed makeup.
Do I look
laughing,
like I need
brother.
Makeup?
Yeah. One time we were in Japan, and Gallows looked at me and goes, we had ourselves a couple beverages, and he goes, hey, man, we got to talk about getting that Botox, man, because you're starting to get the crow's feet. And I said, what in the hell are you talking about?
I said, let me get some cocoa butter on that face of yours. We can't age. We're going to wrestle forever.
I'm not going to show up next tour like this.
Look good. Feel good. You guys aren't worried about getting your pump, and you're worried about getting your needles in your face. Now, you're in LA, man. You're in SoCal.
Brother,
they can do it. Now's the place to do it.
Let's get it in before the wedding.
Tempted for a spray ski, then I realized I had a white shirt to wear today, and I went, well, I can't show up sweating Tanner on the Rome show.
Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows. Listen, phone lines are wide open. 1-800-636-8686. Guys, lay it out. This notion of good brother. What's it mean to be a good brother, and what is the good brother life all about?
Gallows.
Good brother is a term that I don't know. I probably started saying it about 10 years ago and just kind of picked up in our industry. And it just means that's a good dude. That's a guy you want to hang out with. That's a guy you want to crack a beer with. He's one of the boys.
He don't stooge on nobody.
He won't stooge on you. He won't tell on you
for doing things you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, you know, if he'll you're a single you brother and you're cruising the ways, you know.
Snitches
you need
get stitches.
Brothers,
like, he won't stooge on you, right?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. It's a term of endearment.
Okay.
Yeah. And Gallows, he's been single now for 2 years. And I didn't realize that a human being could go on a run like this. my hot Asian wife's out here, and she loves Gallows, but she kind of hates him.
Yeah, there's some hate in there, too. But you know.
Because he's bringing you down to that level, right?
Wait, no, of course not.
Of course not, dude.
I'm a straight brother, baby.
You're a good father and a good brother.
Of course.
The Valentine's dinner with all three of us, not just them.
How'd that go?
Yeah,
the third wheel.
It didn't turn out so well.
Yeah, I'm still not sure how she felt about it, but we'll get there.
All right, Carl, so how did you first get into wrestling? And when you were coming up, who were your guys that you really looked up to and admired?
4 years old, 5 years old, TBS is Superstation. Nature Boy Ric Flair is on the TV cutting a promo. I looked at my dad. I looked at my mom. I said, what is this?
Right.
I saw the Four Horsemen, Sting, Lex Luger. I was NWA, WCW, because I grew up in North Carolina. And it was the only thing I wanted to do. Then MTV came on, True Life, I want to be a pro wrestler. And it showed they had a wrestling school in Cincinnati. And I said, there's wrestling schools? Mom,
my God.
I'm sorry, but I'm quitting college and quitting playing baseball in college, and I'm moving to Cincinnati.
Dude, how did that talk go?
She literally looked at me and goes, "Do whatever you want, son."
That's the
mom that I took to the tour stop.
Okay,
I quit college, moved to Cincinnati. Thank God it paid off, and I'm with the WWE
now. That's incredible. Well, you were playing baseball in college.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, uh-huh. Mars Hill College, D2 school.
Okay,
that makes mom a good sister, by the way.
That's what we say. Yeah,
she's a good sister.
Mom's a good sister because she was feeding me drinks at the tour stop.
Dude, she's the best sister.
The greatest.
Maybe the greatest sister.
Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows in studio. So, Luke, what about you? When did you first get into wrestling?
Man, 8 years old, I saw Jake the Snake Roberts hit the DDT and drop that 12-foot python on a little jabroni on WWE Superstars, and I did the same thing. Dad, what is this? And he goes, No. So for me, it was like an obsession, and I played Division II college football.
Okay.
But a good little short story. I'm wearing a mask. I'm taping up the little tattoo that I have, and I'm secretly wrestling on the weekends. Car lots, malls, county fairs, whatever. Well, I had a stooge.
While playing football. You're in college. You're playing football.
I'm playing in the NCAA. But an unbrotherly brother on the football team stooged.
So he told on him, yeah.
He told on him.
That's not a good brother, Roman.
That's the worst.
Yeah, I'm in Clarksburg, West Virginia, having a hell of a battle royal.
Like, what did that guy get
in the
out of
town,
that? Why
in
is
the
that
town
guy
mall,
stooging?
Yeah, he's just, yeah.
Nothing.
He's a stooge.
He's a stooge. And I look out, and what do I see? The head coach of the Fairmont State Falcons like this.
Oh, wow.
And I went, oh, boy. So I got thrown out of the ring, and I ran to my car, and I drove back to the dorm, and I got a call at 7 a.m. We need you in the office. And I came in, and I was going to secretly go to North Carolina that weekend and wrestle without my mask. So I was very excited. I had the little bit of hair that I had bleached white. I had the brother tan. I was ready to go. They called me in and go, "We know about the wrestling." And I go, What do you guys mean?
Not what, me. What wrestling?
What wrestling? I saw the Masked Assassin. I saw the Masked Assassin. I didn't see me.
Prove it. Show me a picture.
So he goes, you need to decide if you want to be Dusty Rhodes or contribute to this football team. I go, I want to be Dusty Rhodes.
I just fell out of my mouth.
I'm out of here.
Dude, he gave you an ultimatum?
He did.
Wrestling or football?
It's wrestling or football. So he goes, you have a week to think about it. I go, I'm done. I had a great brother week.
I just took 10 seconds. I'm good.
Cruising into my wrestling career. I've made about $20 wrestling so far. Then I had to call home and tell Big Dale Hankinson.
Dude,
hey,
don't blow, bro. That's really important. So I mean, it's one thing to tell the coach you're not going to wrestle. You have to tell the family
Dad. You're
not going to wrestle. And I guarantee Dad. If your old man was like my old man, he probably said, how much are you making?
Well, yeah, that's what he said. He goes, you make no money at this. And then for a man, spur of the moment, to put together a string of expletives like he did and still support me all these years later, it was amazing. Because, I mean, he went ham on me, as they say.
Of course.
He did go ham on you. All right, so guys, whenever I have UFC guys on, we always talk about what it was like in the early days. I mean, easy to look at the UFC right now and see how these guys are killing it. And we could talk about what they make or what they don't make. But the early days, man, the stories were crazy. Oh, yeah. When you guys were coming up in the early days, what was it like?
Yeah, I think the first two or three years, it was obviously free. At the most, I got paid $5 in Georgetown, Kentucky. You know, I trained with Roger Ruffin in the Northern Wrestling Federation in Cincinnati, and I can still remember wrestling at Bone Crushers, baby, where there's sellout is 50. Yep. I'll never forget wrestling in front of 8, and I was the main event. I remember thinking, I wonder if they didn't come because of me.
Right.
And then driving to Georgetown, Kentucky, which is an hour and a half down from Cincinnati, getting $5 there, come back up to the Madison Theater in Covington, Kentucky on Mondays, get maybe $5 there. Next weekend, Friday in Wilmington, Ohio, maybe $10 there. Fairfield, Ohio, maybe $25.
Bro,
if I hit
it
right.
What kept you going? I mean, did you think I'm going to be a legend one day? It's going to pay off, or did you just love doing it?
Like, you know, I always had a confidence in myself that it'd pay off. I felt like, you know, you've got to believe in yourself, and it's the only thing that I truly wanted to do.
Right. And so, like, Luke, what about you? When did you start thinking, man, I could make a living doing this, a good living?
I knew. I had blinders on. I had to get in there somehow. I remember driving 10 hours to the very top of the Northeast and then going, all right, man, you can eat McDoubles and McChickens or you can pay your tolls. I'm running the tolls.
For real?
Yeah. You know, that's what we did. And
those were the choices you had to make back in the day.
It paid off pretty quick. You know, I was 3 years in when I got my first deal, and I've been doing it full-time ever since. I was 21 then. So now it's here we are 14 years later.
Uh-huh. But, I remember map questing from Fairfield, Ohio to
oh, yeah, printing the directions.
To South right. Dakota. It was 15 hours. Drove there, wrestled at a casino. There was 8 people in this casino.
A 15-hour drive for that.
I got $50, and he didn't pay us for the gas.
What a payday.
Dude.
And I had to call in to work. I was working with mentally handicapped people at We Care Homes to pay the bills 5 days a week. I had to call in and say, I'm sorry, but my tire blew out. And I'm not going to be able to make it to work. Oh, come on, man. What are you doing? Yeah. I'm sorry. You know where I wrestle. And I'm lying.
Right.
So that I can make this $50 and then drive back home.
For 15 hours. Like, what kind of a car were you driving back then?
Oh, somebody else drove. It was probably 5 of us in the car. Ryan Stone.
10 of you.
Of course,
in
his name was Ryan Stone. Pompano Joe. Jesse Hyde.
Pompano Joe.
And Chad Two. Chad Two Bad Allegra.
All good brothers.
All good brothers.
Some real brother shit going on.
So like when you guys ended up in Japan, right? So you're part of a deal of the NJPW for a while before you come back to the States, man. What was it like to work and live and wrestle in Japan?
You know, man, I was there for 8 years. When I first signed that contract in 2008, man, it was the coolest thing that ever happened. It was the first time that I started getting paid. So I did it from 2002 until 2000.
Give me an idea. I hate being a bag, but like you went from $5, $10, $15.
I went from probably $5,000 in the 2007 to making probably $55,000 in 2008. And that was like I just struck gold.
Uh-huh.
Then each year the contract got better. And by the end, we were pulling some bank.
And what were the fans like? What was the wrestling like there?
It's still the same thing. Good guy versus bad guy. It's still telling a story, but there's nothing like competing in Japan. Wrestling in Tokyo or in Osaka or Sapporo or Fukuoka or Nagoya, all those towns that we hit, those people believe, man, and they love the sport of professional wrestling.
They don't know it's fake. They don't know that.
Allegedly. Scripted entertainment, right?
Like, That's it, of course, dude.
I got a great story about that. Finn Balor's a big star now. And this is when the Bullet Club was running hot.
Yeah.
And he was our quote-unquote leader. And we're waiting in the lobby for somebody else, Tama Tonga, to come downstairs. And Finn is Irish. And he goes, why am I always down here waiting for everybody? I'm the leader. And I said,
tell him what you said.
I said, whoa, Finn. Pipe it down, man. You know that Morgan Freeman wasn't actually God and Bruce Almighty, right? this is scripted entertainment, baby. This is the television show. He goes, huh? And he stormed out.
Fake is such a funny word when it comes to what we do because you're moronic to think the big boot and the leg drop really pin somebody. But on the other hand, I was saying in the car on the way over here, I wish all the things that we've heard about ourselves for all these years were true. Like, I wish there were fake chairs.
Lay it out for me.
I wish the ring felt like a trampoline. I wish all of those things because I would feel so much better. But it's funny because the WWE has cleaned up the business so much. Like, when we first broke in 15, 16, 17 years ago, if you took a chair shot to the head and put your hands up, you were considered not a man.
Right.
So we're standing there for $20 just getting our El Kabonged. And now the headshots are out of there. The drug testing policy is so it's the most advanced one in sports that I know of. So they really cleaned it up, and they take a lot better care of the guys than
the concussion protocol.
Than 20 years ago, it's a lot different. So,
like how much give is there in that ring? I mean, what's that ring feel like?
But my wife got. I was telling. I took about a month off when we signed with WWE before we started up, and I went back. I went down to the Performance Center in Orlando, and I took one bump. I took one fall just to feel, and I got up.
Yeah, right.
And I shook it off, but I lost everything. I couldn't feel it for a second. My wife got in the ring and she goes, "Wow, I didn't realize it was so hard." Huh. And she was with Diva and around, walking around. But it's that thing. There's not much give, Good Brother Romy.
Well, if you guys in the jungle want to experience it, come to the Good Brothers Dojo Professional Wrestling School, owned and operated by me in Jacobsburg, Georgia. Cheap plug.
No. Do it again. Where and when? How can they do that?
Good Brothers Dojo. GoodBrothersDojo@gmail.com. We are a fantastic professional wrestling school located just south of Atlanta, Georgia. I show up once a week, but I got a full staff of trainers, students. It feeds into our wrestling promotion, so come and join us.
Really?
You want to hear some more?
He also put his son to work called Brush Boy, by the way.
I didn't put him to work. He volunteered.
How'd that go?
Well, he created a character. He came in. He got a ring jacket, and he said, "I got better hair than you. This is what I'm going to do." And I said,
"Family business."
All right, 11-year-old son, here we go.
Really quickly, I mean, dude, you played college football. You tell me, how does it compare in terms of physicality and the way you felt after a game as compared to how you feel after a show?
I respect the hell out of guys who play football at a high level because I know how that felt. I think the difference with us is the grind because we're on the road so much. You know, we're a live event touring media-based company, but we're out there 200 nights a year doing this and feeling it and then getting in the car and driving 3-4 hours and it's a grind. There's no offseason.
The only brother who's more comfortable than you two guys is Baby Cash.
Oh, baby.
I got to be in a minute. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a short time out right now. Where are the guests who can carry into a second segment, but the Good Brothers can? If you've got a question for or a comment for them, hit us up right now. It's toll free, 1-800-636-8686. Man, don't be an idiot. You got to get through Hawk. What about Hawk? You believe this guy?
What is Hawk?
Hawk is a...
give it to him.
Bad brother. Carl, dude, you are a fan of the 911 library calls, aren't you?
Brother,
Do you have a favorite one?
I've got a lot of favorite ones, but I think my number one, I love the one where the operator falls asleep, of course.
Right, of course.
This person is expressing an emergency, and you can hear the brother snoring on the other line, right?
That's not a good brother. That's a dead brother. That's a drunk brother.
That's a very dead brother.
It's a very over-brothered brother.
Nothing's better than this one. I was about to explain what it is to him, but he needs to hear it live. It's obviously Forbes, man. Like this guy is my favorite.
Hold up. Roll Forbes. Luke has not heard this.
911, what is your emergency?
Yes, I need a police officer over here.
What's going on?
I've got two teenage daughters, and I just got home from work. They were physically fighting with each other, and one of them kicked a hole in a door. And they're 12 and almost 14, and the 12-year-old is completely out of control. And I physically, if she's as big as I am, I can't control her.
Okay, did you want us to come over to shoot her? Are you there?
Excuse me?
That's a joke. Okay.
Who are you? What's your name?
Mike Corbett.
Okay, that's not funny, Mike.
Dude, listen to her turn him inside out.
I'm going to file a formal complaint.
I don't blame you a bit.
Because you know what? This is really not very funny.
Yeah, it is.
It's hilarious.
It's not going to be very funny when I go in front of your supervisor and tell him.
I understand.
Actually, it's really funny. Forbes is a legend.
Yes, he can. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well, sorry doesn't check it. I need a police officer.
Hold on.
Yeah, you hear this? My whole thing was like, she's got no control of her kids. They're too big. They're too strong. They're fighting.
12.
She's got no control of her life. But the second he said, "You want us to come over and shoot him?" Oh, she got control then, boy.
She took it quickly then.
She got control then.
I feel like at the end, too, he was saying, hold on. He was going to answer another call. Did you catch that part?
Right. I'll get right back
to
you.
Hang on a second.
Good brother. Forbes is the best brother.
You want us to come over there and shoot her?
All right. So what's going on here is the Good Brothers are here. We've got this unbelievable tag team superstar team right here, and that motivated these two guys. Canada's best tag team. Let's go there. Now, Luke, I don't know if you know these guys. I know Carl does. We go to Team Canada.
Let's get Team Canada.
Let's find out. Matt and Tyler with a tag team call. Brothers, what's up?
Well, well, well. Isn't that a cute little tandem you brought in today? A couple XFL draft prospects or what? What do you think, Matt? Which one of these guys will be going first overall to the Orlando Rage?
Definitely.
Hell, I don't know, Tyler. The Orlando Rage might be a little lofty, man. I actually had to Google these cats, but I guarantee they know who we are. You guys think you can come into our house, the house that Canada built? You know, don't get too excited about Hawk fanboying over you guys either, right? This guy ain't exactly Vince McMahon.
Hawk certainly isn't Vince McMahon, man. He's way more similar to the, "It's still real to me, damn it," loser. Hell, even Vince knows Team Canada wears the tag team straps in this house. You guys want them, come get them, good bros. Your ring or ours.
Matt, you know, these guys call themselves the Good Brothers. I don't know, man. I don't even think these guys would get through the Wood Brothers.
Brothers? No. Why are you going to come in and try to disrespect like that? Oh, I guess those two bros want to make sure that you guys know that it's still their house.
Oh, I feel like, can I be the one that...
Go ahead and do what you got to do.
I was the one that ran that one, thank God. That was starting to... I feel like... They gave it a good shot, they were absolutely reading that.
You guys can't carry a promo, but if you want to step in the ring for real, Jenkinsburg, Georgia, Good Brothers Dojo, I'll waive the fee. Let's do this, brothers. Team Canada versus the boys.
Oh, if you're going to bring a take, you can't write it on notepad and read back and forth. Your turn. Yeah. It's your turn.
I wish we had a teleprompter.
If you had a teleprompter like we have never used before, you guys could have done a lot better.
Wow, man, so you'd waive the fee.
Absolutely.
You'd waive the fee.
Let's do it.
Yeah, kind of weird. I'm not sure why those guys are coming in with that kind of hate. What's that all about, Hawk? Hawk, did you not screen that out? Or were you just brushing on your porn stash? Come
that's
on, man.
Okay. That's the kind of, that wasn't even hate in our world. That was.
Oh, no, that was great.
That was fine.
Just a couple of, I don't mind dropping it again. Well, should I?
Hit it.
Nerds!
All right, back at it. Let's go to the Natty. Harper in Cincinnati. Harper, what's up? You're on with the Good Brothers.
You guys are too sweet.
Good Brother Harper. Throwing it up
that.
For you.
How old is that kid? Is there a dad? That's Harper's son. Harper, are you there?
Yes.
Good Brother sick. Harper?
Yeah, he's sick.
Oh, he's a little B.I.T., a brother in training. I can already tell. I love it.
I got a sneaky feeling I know who Harper is. I think he might be a friend of the family.
I like that, too. Thank God. Speaking of a B.I.T., can we get the B.I.T. in here?
So, Cash, BIT, right?
I've seen this little star on Twitter. I've seen him on social. Here he comes.
He's going to be on WrestleMania someday.
Carl, who is the B.I.T.?
Look at this brother in training. Look at baby Cash. Hi, baby Cash.
What a handsome little hoot.
Awesome.
You used to have a good brother, Romy? Okay, come here, hot Asian wife. Hold on, you ain't sneaking out of here yet.
Can she speak English today or no?
No, hold on. Can you talk today, baby?
Yes, I can.
Here we go.
She's a lot quieter on air. I love it.
I'm not going to refer to her the way you do. Does you have a name, right? It's not hot Asian wife.
It's Christine.
Hi, Christine. How are you? Look at Cash.
Say hi. You say hi. You have a look at that. What a brother.
Show him how strong he is.
You want to show how strong you are, baby?
Let's see it.
Look at
that. Wow, man.
Look at that smile. Look at that little brother smile. He flew here 5 hours last night. Great on the
How'd
plane.
How'd that go?
He's incredible. It's ridiculous.
You didn't stick a device in his hand like I did my kids when they were... I don't think my kids got on a plane until they were 14. I was too paranoid.
Yeah, no, I am too.
5 hours.
She flew with all four a couple weeks ago. Going,
dude. Mm-hmm. No way. By yourself.
Wolf. Yeah. She's pretty strong.
No help. By yourself.
She's pretty strong to deal with a brother like myself.
Wow. And then the brother in training. Look at the way he's looking at dad, too.
What's up, baby boy?
He's like, dad's the coolest.
You know daddy's cool.
Dude, he has not made a sound since he got here.
Yeah, you see daddy in his skinny jeans and jean jacket. No, he's cool. Huh? You know daddy's a brother. You want to go back to mommy?
That is awesome. Baby Cash. Your world, baby Cash. He is so great. Dude, you dudes, I mean, this is like real. This is not an act. This is not a show. This is not scripted. You bros have a real affinity and respect for each other.
Oh, yeah.
That's my brother.
We got massive love for each other. We ride together. We eat together. We brother pump together. We wrestle together. We do it all. Drink the blood.
The first time we ever hung out was in Osaka, Japan. We had somebody take us out. We'd never hung out before. We sat there. We drank a bunch of soda pops together. And we literally solved all the world's problems.
Yeah, Sapporos or soda pops?
Sapporos.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And soda pops.
And then you knew.
We had the stepbrothers moment. Did we just become best friends?
I think so.
We did. Let's do karate in the garage.
All right, let's check it out really quickly on Twitter. Let's do karate in the garage. Hooligan Hour tweets. This is already the greatest Jim Rome segment of all time.
Give it to us.
#Good Brothers. Jake in Buffalo. Jim, being a good brother definitely means not tattling. Thanks, Lyle and Eric.
There you
That's
go.
Right, Lyle and Eric. Couple brothers.
brothers who shotgun their parents.
Who tell, yeah.
Those are not good brothers,
That's
dude.
Not good brothers.
Those are murdering, brothers. Those are the Menendez brothers, bro. Those are not good brothers.
He doesn't know the show,
brothers. He doesn't know the show. We're talking about the Menendez brothers, not the good brothers. The murdering brothers. Stucknuts in.
There
so, will Carl Anderson declare for Smack Off 25?
Oh, boy. I remember one time when Silk called in years ago and said, hey, I'm not going to call in for the Smack Off, Romy. You know, I've laid my ground. Like, I'm Silk. I'm not going to call in. He hung up, and you said, oh, no, Silk. You're going to be in.
Right.
You're going to be in the Smack Off. If good brother Romy tells you to call into the Smack Off, then I guess I got
to
be it.
I'm not going to say. I mean, it's up to you. I mean, we would love to have you, but you think about that.
Count me in.
All right. Well, the good brother's in. God. The good brother's in. All right. So now you guys have been through a lot of stuff together. Like, if I were to say to you, Luke, what's the most embarrassing thing you've ever seen happen to the good brother? Because there's stuff happens, man, right?
Yeah, he's had some moments. We covered it in Botch Club, so when I embarrass him, he can always one-up me.
Sure.
I don't know what the maneuver was that he took on what particular night.
Guy stomped me in the stomach.
Stomped him in the stomach, yeah. And what was the result?
I pooped in my pants.
He pooped in his pants.
Yeah.
Mid-ring poop.
Years ago.
Right.
Well, years and years ago.
Yeah, but that'll happen though, man. If you get stomped in the stomach, right?
Yeah.
It's gonna happen.
I went, oh no, man. I just did this. I whispered to the guy that was wrestling, and he goes, I can smell it. I said, well, me too. Anyways, can we get out
way
of here?
Way to analyze that. You want to keep going?
No. I don't think there's any further analysis necessary. All
can
right,
you
so
me and get out
part
of here?
The deal, though, you can say what happened to him.
Well, what happened on Botch Club, there's so many things that happened to him. This one happened actually. This one happened in Venice at the Gold's Gym when we flew in, we landed, we went to get a little brother pump in. Well, big man hits his head all the time, right? 6'6", 6'7", whatever it is. So he whacks his head all the time. Well, the back of our SUV is open.
Which Carl loves.
And I just hear this. Wham! I hear,
expletives.
There you go.
Expletives.
Yeah. I just see him screaming around, and me and AJ Styles are laughing, and we're trying to keep it down because I don't like to laugh in his face too much because he gets really mad at that moment. He runs over, he goes, stupid car! He kicks the car as hard as he can. Wham! Falls right over his luggage because the car kicks back, brother.
Oh, dude, it's getting worse.
I saw him roll down. He's laid on the ground. He just went, oh.
Wow.
That's just one of the things.
One time years
still
ago.
Still not as bad as crapping yourself.
No.
One time.
Yeah. I win.
You win. Yeah.
You got about 60, man.
We first got on the road and, you know, we weren't making big money yet or anything. It was like my first 6 months of having a contract, and there were a bunch of us, and we ate somewhere, left the car open. Someone stole my wrestling gear out of the car.
Wow.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm pretty raged out about it because I have to wrestle tomorrow. I don't have my trunks and my boots and all that. And I back up and deliver a hell of a kick to the car. And then everybody starts laughing in my face and goes, you don't want to pay to fix the rental car, so you just work kick the car. I gave the car a fake kick.
with a little
bro, you got to stop trying to fight cars, man. You really should stop fighting cars.
0-2, man.
Good brothers, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, WWE Tag Team Superstars. Fellas, you're in Cali, so where are you going to be? We've got about 60 seconds. If the clones want to check you out, where should they go?
You know, WrestleMania.
Oh, baby.
MetLife Stadium.
30 seconds.
New Jersey, right?
New Jersey. Come and see the boys.
If they
want to
hit you on social,
Carl
quickly.
Anderson, WWE, Instagram, and Twitter.
At Luke Gallows, WWE. Hit us up. We love it.
Friday's Daily Jungle is rep by On Deck. Small business owners, do you need help managing your cash flow or hiring employees or purchasing inventory or upgrading your office space? Most traditional banks lack the technology and resources to truly understand a small business, and they would rather just deal with larger, more established businesses. On Deck gets it. On Deck is 100% committed to small business owners with fast, easy, and tailored financing. You can get funding in as quickly as 24 hours with term loans up to $500,000 and lines of credit up to $100,000, none of which require business collateral. On Deck is the secure financing service that business owners everywhere can truly rely on. So if you're a small business owner and you need access to capital, go to ondeck.com/Rome right now. And as an exclusive listener to this podcast, you'll get a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. Apply online or by phone and get approved in minutes. Go to ondeck.com/Rome. That's ondeck.com/Rome to get a free consultation right now. Alvin, why don't you do what you do and roll it all back? We've got ourselves a tremendous Monday program. What's going on? Welcome to the Jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is great to be with you. Why don't we start with some football? I'm an Alliance guy. I'm all in on the Alliance.
Yeah! Never saw the man coming.
If you tuned in, you saw some good action. If you didn't tune in, I suggest you start in week two. My house is an Alliance house, and I suggest you make yours too. It's the KVN Show, starring Kyle Van Noy. I'm Jim Rome.
Jim, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. The KVN Show, that's what I call it when I'm on the radio, so let's get it.
Kelvin Sampson.
You don't have to be their life. They have to be your life, and I've never forgotten that. And we try to make our program as much of a family atmosphere and a family experience as we can be.
Email.
Was that JaVale McGee or when Devin Powell's literally testicle exploded?
Twitter.
Eric Snow's scale. I'm looking at Eric Snow. That does not
That's
look real.
Impossible.
I mean, that can't be real, right? We're talking to John Morant.
Told me just fake sick and go to the bathroom and then come out with the Murray State gear on. And Coach Matt was actually panicking. He was like, do I need to turn the air down?
That's your take. That he didn't kick her that hard? Don't even listen to the program. Like, I'm not in the business of telling people not to listen to my show. That would be horrible for business. I'd rather you not listen.
It's good for him. It's good for the team.
Doesn't seem to make sense to bring in a guy like that when you don't really need him.
Certainly deserves another shot. We have a president in office that's done worse. I'm flaming.
Devin Still, and he is in studio.
My phone rang, and it was the doctors, and I thought they was about to tell me something bad because they called me so quick, but they actually told me that they couldn't find any cancer cells in Leah's body, and it was the best moment of my life.
Major kudos and gratitude to Bob Costas. He went out the way he came in when he cared enough 40 years ago to handwrite that letter to some no-name kid cracking the book in the OC.
It's one thing to be out-schemed, quite another to be out-streamed. I'm going to open up a can of Hulu on your ass. Man, wait till they find out I've been watching Stadium. Daniel, Jeremiah is my guest.
Come in here, and she's like, what's going on? Are the kids okay? And I'm like, this Trey Pipkins, I'm watching this kid move right here. Wow. Dude, we've got four kids, man. Date night, that left a long time.
That train left the station a long time ago, brother. Grant in Tulsa.
Going to buy iAfraidy a house.
iAfraidy. Rack me, I'm out. Damn, Grant, you're good, dude. Ask you.
Emailed.
I don't think that Kyler Murray is picking getting his brain smashed in for 3 to 5 years instead of getting paid much more to chew sunflower seeds and play grab ass for 15 years. Ross Tucker, NFL.
I asked him, how'd you hear about it? Like, oh, well, there was some NFL guy was on with Jim Rome at the Super Bowl, and I heard him on Radio Row talking about this.
Roger in Mass.
With the incredible defenses that defended that team, I don't want to de-minimize someone's injuries. But
you know, anytime somebody says, look, I don't want to de-minimize somebody, somebody's about to get de-minimized.
De-minimized.
Martin Truex Jr. is my guest.
And I don't know that, you know, if I just ran somebody over to win a race, I don't know that I would feel satisfied.
Clones, I know what you think before you think it.
Email.
I'd run somebody over in order to win. Signed, Smoke. Sorry. Oh, great, Rome. John Cooper is their head coach. He joins us.
They asked me to come interview, and I'm like, holy shit, this is craziness. You must be popular because I got a bunch of text messages from all over the country saying, you're going to Jim Rome show? This is unbelievable.
He's looking at his phone. All right, they're on the move. They're on the move. They're coming. They're coming. Hey, Mr. Rome, how was your dinner? Great, bro. Great. The car will be right out. Do you have a nightcap, sir? No, you're about to get one.
He might end up somewhere in a hotel room with kidneys on ice.
Jerry Tillery, what did you make of the Terry Jillery nickname?
Oh, it was terrible. It wasn't imaginative at all. He could have done something much better.
I'm fine if he has to blow mud on his linebacker to prevent a touchdown.
And that'll be enough, Rex.
It starts Cabaret, and it's one table where you get the most eye time from the ladies coming out of the dressing room and then going to the stage. You get the most eye time in reverse order. He's double dipping.
Eddie Olczyk is my guest.
Was I scared? Absolutely. I didn't want to leave this earth way early, you know? And the thing I think that kept me going was that the people most important to me knew how I felt about them.
Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, they are both in-house.
I don't know what the maneuver was that he took on what particular night.
Guy stomped me in the stomach.
Stomped him in the stomach, yeah. And what was the result?
I pooped in my pants.
Pooped in his pants?
Yeah.
Mid-ring poop.
I went, oh no, man, I just did this. And I whispered to the guy that was wrestling, and he goes, I can smell it.
We're going to go to the Jim Rome show. I said, well, okay. I said, I don't know what it is, but I'm going. I'm in.
In market, on topic. Look at that guy. Get some rest.
Good to be home.
Forward to talking to you again down the road, man.
Anytime. I'd love to be on your program.
Do me a favor. Just kind of sit up.
Pay-per-view raping.
Kutcher.
To minimize.
Okay.
And that'll do it.
Good night now. Good night now.